thoughts of MS patients, and May, feeling some darkness opening its wings within her, signed off. May could no longer keep her eyes open. Though she'd only made it through 3 days of her social backlog, she shut down and made for the parking lot. Tuesday morning's shoot was lighter than Monday's, but the activity on her third screen kept her in her chair for the day's first 3 hours. Before the third screen, there had always been a lull, maybe 10 or 12 seconds, between when she'd answered a query and when she knew whether or not the answer had been satisfying. She'd used the time to memorize the boilerplates and do a few follow-ups, every so often to check her phone. But now that became more challenging. The third screen feed dropped 40 new inner circle messages every few minutes, 15 or so outer circle posts and zings, and May used every available moment of downtime to quickly scroll through, make sure there was nothing that demanded her immediate attention, and then come back to her main screen. By the end of the morning, the flow was manageable, even exhilarating. The company had so much going on, so much humanity and good feeling, and was pioneering on all fronts that she knew she was being improved just by being in the circler's proximity. It was like a well-curated organic grocery store. You knew by shopping there that you were healthier. You couldn't make a bad choice, because everything had been vetted already. Likewise, everyone at the circle there had been chosen, and thus the gene pool was extraordinary, the brain power phenomenal. It was a place where everyone endeavored, constantly and passionately, to improve themselves, each other, share their knowledge, disseminate it to the world. By lunchtime, though, she was wiped out and very much looking forward to sitting, with her cerebral cortex removed, for an hour on the lawn with Annie, who had insisted on it. At 11:50, though, a second screen message from Dan appeared.
"You got a few mins?"
She told Annie she might be late, and when she arrived to Dan's office, he was leaning against the door jamb. He smiled sympathetically at May, but with a raised eyebrow, as if there was something about May that was perplexing him, something he couldn't put his finger on. He extended his arm into the office, and she slipped past him. He closed the door.
"Sit down, May. You know Alistair, I assume."
She hadn't seen the man sitting in the corner, but now that she saw him, she knew she didn't know him. He was tall, in his late 20s, with a careful swirl of sandy brown hair. He was positioned diagonally against a rounded chair, his thin frame resting stiffly, like a 2x4. He didn't stand a meter, so May extended her hand to him.
"Nice to meet you," she said.
Alistair sighed with great resignation and extended his hand as if he were about to touch something washed ashore and rotting. May's mouth went dry. There was something very wrong. Dan sat down.
"Now, I hope we can make this right as soon as possible," he said. "Would you like to start, May?"
The two men looked at her. Dan's eyes were steady, while Alistair's look was hurt but expectant. May had no idea what to say, no idea what was happening. As the silence festered and grew, Alistair blinked furiously, holding back tears.
"I can't believe this," he managed to say.
Dan turned to him.
"Alistair, come on. We know you're hurting, but let's keep it in perspective."
Dan turned to May.
"I'll point out the obvious, May. We're talking about Alistair's Portugal brunch."
Dan let the words linger, expecting May to jump in, but May had no idea what those words meant.
Alistair's Portugal brunch?
Could she say she had no idea what that meant? She knew she couldn't. She'd been late to the feed. This must have something to do with that.
"I'm sorry," she said. She knew she would have to tread water until she could figure out what all this was about.
"That's a good start," Dan said. "Right, Alistair?"
Alistair shrugged. May continued fumbling. What did she know? There had been a brunch, that much was certain, and clearly she had not been there. The brunch was planned by Alistair, and now he was hurt. All this was reasonable to assume.
"I wish I could have been there," she ventured,
and immediately saw slight signs of confirmation in their faces. She was onto something.
"But I wasn't sure if..."
Now she took a leap.
"I wasn't sure if I was welcome, being so new here."
Their faces softened. May smiled, knowing she'd hit the right note.
Dan shook his head, happy to have his assumption that May was not an inherently bad person confirmed. He got up from his chair, came around his desk, and leaned against it.
May, have we not made you feel welcome?
He asked.
No, you have. You really have, but I'm not a member of Alistair's team, and I wasn't quite sure what the rules were about, you know, members of my team attending the brunches of more seasoned members of other teams.
Dan nodded.
See, Alistair? I told you it was easily explained.
Now Alistair was sitting upright, as if ready to engage again.
Well, of course you're welcome, he said, patting her knee playfully. Even if you're a little oblivious.
Now, Alistair.
I'm sorry, he said, and took a deep breath. I've got it under control now. I'm very happy.
There were a few more statements of apology and laughs about understandings and misunderstandings and communications and flow and mistakes and the order of the universe, and finally, it was time to let it go. They stood.
Let's hug it out, Dan said.
And they did, forming a tight scrum of newfound communion. By the time May was back at her desk, a message was waiting for her.
Thanks again for coming to meet Alistair and me today. I think that was very productive and helpful. HR knows about the situation, and to close it out, they always like to get a statement together. So I typed this up. If it sounds good, just sign it on screen and send it back.
Glitch number 5616ARN/MRH/RK2. Day, Monday, June 11th. Participants, May Holland, Alistair Knight. Story. Alistair of the Renaissance, Team 9, held a brunch for all staffers who had demonstrated an interest in Portugal. He sent out 3 notices about the event, none of which May, of the Renaissance, Team 6, answered. Alistair became concerned that there was no RSVP or communication of any kind from May. When the brunch occurred, May did not attend, and Alistair understandably was distressed about why she would not respond to repeated invitations and then fail to attend. This was non-participation in a classic sense. Today, a meeting was held between Dan, Alistair, and May, where May explained that she was not sure that she was welcome at such an event, given it was being hosted by a member of a different team, and she was in her second week of life at the company. She feels very bad about causing worry and emotional distress to Alistair, not to mention threatening the delicate ecology of the Renaissance. Now all is worked out, and Alistair and May are great friends and feel rejuvenated. All agree a fresh start is warranted and welcome. There was a line below the statement where May was to sign, and she used her fingernail to sign her name on the screen. She submitted it and instantly received a thank you from Dan.
That was great, he wrote. Alistair is obviously a little sensitive, but that's only because he's such a fiercely committed circler, just like you, right? Thank you for being so cooperative. You were great. Onward.
May was late and hoped Annie would still be waiting. The day was clear and warm, and May found Annie on the lawn, typing on her tablet with a granola bar dangling from her mouth. She squinted up at May.
Hey, you're tardy.
Sorry.
How are you?
May made a face.
I know, I followed the whole thing,
Annie said, chewing extravagantly.
Stop eating like that. Close your mouth.
You did?
I was just listening while I worked. They asked me to, and I've heard much worse. Everyone has a few of those early on. Eat fast, by the way. I want to show you something.
In quick succession, 2 waves passed over May. First, profound unease that Annie had been listening without her knowledge, followed by a wave of relief, knowing her friend had been with her, even if remotely, and could confirm that May would survive.
Did you? She asked.
Did I what?
Ever get called on the carpet like that? I'm still shaking.
Of course. Once a month, maybe. I still do. Chew fast.
May ate as quickly as she could, watching a game of croquet being played on the lawn. The players seemed to have made up their own rules. May finished her lunch.
Good. Get up,
Annie said, and they made their way toward Tomorrow Town.
What? Your face still has a question protruding from it.
Did you go to that Portugal brunch?
Annie scoffed.
Me? No. Why? I wasn't invited.
But why was I? I didn't sign up for it. I'm not some Portugal freak.
It's on your profile, isn't it? Didn't you go there once?
Sure, but I never mentioned it on my profile. I've been to Lisbon, but that's it. That was 5 years ago.
They approached the Tomorrow Town building, fronted by a wall of ironwork that looked vaguely Turkish. Annie waved her pass over a wall-mounted pad, and the door opened.
"Did you take pictures?" Annie asked.
"In Lisbon? Sure."
"And they were on your laptop?"
May had to think a second.
"I guess so."
"Then that's probably it. If they were on your laptop, now they're in the cloud, and the cloud gets scanned for information like that. You don't have to run around signing up for Portugal interest clubs or anything. When Alistair wanted to do his brunch, he probably just asked for a search of everyone on campus who had visited the country, took pictures, or mentioned it in an email or whatever. So then he automatically gets a list and sends his invitation out. It saves about 100 hours of nonsense. Over here."
They stopped in front of a long hallway. Annie's eyes were alight with mischief.
"Okay, you want to see something surreal?"
"I'm still weirded out."
"Don't be. Get in here."
Annie opened the door to a beautiful room, some cross between a buffet and a museum and a trade show.
"How crazy is this?"
The room looked vaguely familiar. May had seen something like this on TV.
"It's like one of those gift bag places for celebrities, right?"
May scanned the room. There were products spread all over dozens of tables and platforms. But here, instead of jewelry and pumps, there were sneakers and toothbrushes and a dozen types of chips and drinks and energy bars. May laughed.
"I'm guessing this is free?"
"For you.
For very important people like you and me, yes."
"Jesus Christ, all of this?"
"Yup.
This is the free sample room. It's always full, and this stuff needs to get used one way or the other. We invite rotating groups in. Sometimes it's programmers, sometimes CE people like you. Different group every day."
"And you just take whatever you want?"
"Well, you have to zap your ID on anything you're taking so they know who's taken what. Otherwise, some idiot takes home the whole room."
"I haven't seen any of this stuff yet."
"In stores?"
"No, none of this stuff is in stores yet. These are prototypes in test runs."
"These are actual Levi's?"
May was holding a pair of beautiful jeans, and she was sure they did not yet exist in the world.
"They might be a few months till market, maybe a year. You want those? You can ask for a different size."
"And I can wear them?"
"As opposed to what? Wiping your ass with them?"
"Yeah, they want you to wear them. You're an influential person working at the Circle. You're a style leader, early adopter, all that."
"These are actually my size."
"Good. Take two. You have a bag?"
Annie retrieved a cloth bag with the Circle logo on it and gave it to May, who was hovering over a display of new phone covers and accessories. She picked up a beautiful phone shell that was sturdy as stone, but with a chamois smooth surface.
"Crap," May said. "I didn't bring my phone."
"What? Where is it?"
Annie asked, astounded.
"I guess at my desk."
"May, you are incredible. You're so focused and together, but then you have these weird, spacey lapses. You came to lunch without your phone?"
"Sorry."
"No, it's what I love about you. You're like part human, part rainbow."
"What? Don't get upset."
"I'm just getting a lot of input today."
"You're not still worried, are you?
You think it's okay, that meeting with Dan and Alistair?"
"It's definitely okay."
"He's just that sensitive?"
Annie rolled her eyes.
"Alistair, beyond all reason, but he writes great code. The guy is a machine. It'd take a year to find and train someone to do what he does, so we have to deal with the crazy. There are just some nuts here, needy nuts, and there are those, like Dan, who enable the nuts. But don't worry, I don't think you'll overlap much, with Alistair at least."
Annie checked the time. She had to go.
"You stay till that bag is full," she said. "I'll see you later."
May stayed and filled her bag with jeans and food and shoes and a few new covers for her phone, a sports bra. She left the room feeling like a shoplifter, but encountered no one on the way out. When she got back to her desk, there were 11 messages from Annie. She read the first.
"Hey, May, realizing I shouldn't have gone off on Dan and Alistair that way wasn't very nice, not circly at all. Pretend I didn't say it."
The second.
"You get my last message?"
The third.
"Starting to freak out a little. Why aren't you answering me?"
Fourth.
"Just texted you, called you. Are you dead? Shit, forgot you forgot your phone. You suck." Fifth, if you were offended by what I said about Dan, don't go all silent treatment. I said sorry. Right back. Sixth, are you getting these messages? It's V important. Call me. Seventh, if you're telling Dan what I said, you're a bitch. Since when do we tattle on each other? Eighth, realizing you might just be in a meeting. True? Ninth, it's been 25 minutes. What is up? 10th, just checked and see that you're back at your desk. Call me this instant or we're through. I thought we were friends. 11th, hello? May called her. What the hell, Spaz? Where were you? I saw you 20 minutes ago. I finished in the sample room, used the bathroom, and now I'm here. Did you tell on me? Did I what? Did you tell on me? Annie, what the fuck? Just tell me. No, I didn't tell on you. To who? What did you say to him? Who? Dan. I haven't even seen him. You didn't send a message to him? No, Annie, shit. Promise? Yes. Annie sighed. Okay. Fuck. Sorry. I sent him a message and called him and hadn't heard back. And then I didn't hear back from you, and my brain just put all this together in a weird way. Annie, shit. Sorry. I think you're overstressed. No, I'm fine. Let me get you some drinks tonight. Thanks, no. Please? I can't. We have too many things going on here this week. Just trying to deal with this clusterfuck in Washington. Washington? What about it? It's such a long story. I can't say, actually. But you're the one that has to handle it? All of Washington? They give me some of the government hassle stuff because, I don't know, because they think my dimples help? Maybe they do. I don't know. I just wish there were five of me. You sound terrible, Annie. Take a night off. No, no, I'll be fine. I just have to answer these queries from some subcommittee. It'll be fine, but I better go. Love you. And she hung up. May called Francis. Annie won't go out with me. Will you? Tonight? Out? There's a band here tonight. You know the Creamers? They're playing in the colony. It's a benefit. May said, yes, that sounded good, but when the time came, she didn't want to see a band called the Creamers play in the colony. She cajoled Francis into her car, and they left for San Francisco. You know where we're going? He asked. I don't. What are you doing? He was typing furiously into his phone. I'm just telling everyone I'm not coming. Finished? Yes. He dropped his phone. Good. Let's drink first. And so they parked downtown and found a restaurant that looked so terrible, with faded and unappetizing pictures of the food taped haphazardly to the windows, that they figured it might be cheap. They were right, and they ate curry and drank singa and sat in bamboo chairs that squealed and strained to stay erect. Somewhere toward the end of her first beer, May decided that she would have a second, quickly, and that shortly after dinner, she would kiss Francis on the street. They finished dinner, and she did.
Thank you, he said.
Did you just thank me?
You just saved me so much inner turmoil. I've never made the first move in my life, but usually it takes a woman weeks to figure out she'll have to take the initiative.
Again, May had the feeling of being clubbed with information that complicated her feelings about Francis, who seemed so sweet one moment and so strange and unfiltered the next. Still, because she was riding at the crest of a singa wave, she led him by the hand back to her car where they kissed more while parked on a very busy intersection. A homeless man was watching them, as an anthropologist would from the sidewalk, miming the taking of notes. Let's go, she said, and they left the car and wandered through the city, finding a Japanese souvenir shop open and, next to it, also open, a gallery full of photorealistic paintings of gigantic human haunches.
Big pictures of big asses,
Francis noted, as they found a bench in an alley-turned piazza, the street lamps above giving it the look of blue moonlight.
That was real art. I couldn't believe they hadn't sold anything yet.
May kissed him again. She was in a kissing mood, and knowing that Francis wouldn't make any aggressive moves, she felt at ease kissing him more, knowing it would be only kissing tonight. She threw herself into the kissing, making it mean lust and friendship and the possibility of love, and kissed him while thinking of his face,
wondering if his eyes were open, if he cared about the passers-by who clucked or who hooted but still passed by. In the days that followed, May